Good morning, and welcome to the Federated National Holding Company's third quarter 2015 financial results conference call. My name is Kaylee, and I will be your operator today. Please note that today's call is being recorded. At this, participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question at that time, you may do so by pressing star and then one on your touchtone telephone. Statements in this conference call that are not historical fact are forward-looking statements without limiting the generality of the foregoing. Words such as anticipate, believe, budget, contemplate, continue, could, envision, estimate, expect, guidance, indicate, intend, may, might, plan, possibly, potential, predict, probably, pro forma, project, seek, should, target, or will, or the negative thereof, or other variations thereon, and similar words or phrases or comparable terminology are intended to identify forward-looking statements. The matters discussed on this call that are forward-looking statements are based on current management expectations involving risks and uncertainties that may result in these expectations not being realized. Actual events, outcomes, and results may differ materially from what is expressed or forecasted in forward-looking statements made on this call due to numerous risks and uncertainties, including, but not limited to, the risks and uncertainties described in this conference call, our press release issued today, and other filings made by the company with the SEC from time to time. Forward-looking statements made during this presentation speak only as of the date on which they are made, and Federated National Holding Company specifically disclaims any obligation to update or revise any forward-looking statement to reflect new information, future events, circumstances, or otherwise. Now, at this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Michael Braun, Chief Executive Officer and President of Federated National Holding Company. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us today to discuss Federated National Holding Company's third quarter 2015 financial results. I'm joined on the call by Pete Pajelski, our Chief Financial Officer. Our financial results can be found in our earnings press release. I will go over some brief highlights, and then we will open up the line for questions. Highlights as measured against the same three-month period last year, except where noted: 46.6% increase in net income to $10.6 million, 41.1% increase in gross premiums written to $129.8 million, 38.3% increase in Florida homeowner policies to approximately 230,000, 24.1% increase in book value per share, including non-controlling interest, to $17.53, and a 14.8% increase in book value per share, excluding non-controlling interest, to $16.22, as compared with $14.13 at December 31, 2014. Our strong performance in the first half of the year continued in the third quarter, with us continuing to increase our Florida homeowners market share through organic growth. For the quarter, we bound $56.3 million in new homeowners premium, renewed 92% of the policies in which renewals were offered. The continued organic growth and the high retention rates are a testament to our dedication to the Florida market and the trust that our partner agents have in our entire team. We will continue to focus on delivering the best possible customer experience to our policyholders and agents while optimizing our balance sheet in order to generate a prudent yet sustainable return on equity over the long term. With that, we are glad to open up the call to your questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press star and then one on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Our first question comes from the line of Arash Soleimani with KBW. Your line is open.
Thanks, and good morning.
Good morning, Arash.
Just had a few questions here. Obviously, you guys have a bit of excess capital now. I'm just wondering what your plans are. Is there any plan for potentially a buyback?
Well, the board looks at the capital position every quarter, and we evaluate if we're going to retain it for future opportunities, dividend and buyback, and we'll continue to do so. There's nothing that we're in a position to announce today. We believe that we have a long runway ahead of us. We're about 4% of the Florida market. As we continue to grow that takes capital. There's nothing pending. We've recently, as you know, increased our dividend. And we think that adds value to our shareholders, that we want to bring that capital back to them.
Okay. My next question is, in terms of Monarch, now that the OIR issue with the, I guess, the optimization is resolved and you guys are in the clear on that front, I guess, how does that affect how fast you plan to ramp up Monarch, and you know, what are your plans in general for Monarch premiums?
Sure. The first thing is optimization. That's absolutely not the right word. We're never accused of being optimizing. So just to clarify, it was a use of our analytics to understand our book of business. In terms of the analytics, they have been filed and approved, and that goes live, our new analytics, on November 16th. So that's coming up pretty quick, and we're very excited about that. In terms of Monarch, once again, this is a very deliberate launch of a company and a product. It's going according to plan. But just to refresh, we specifically, as I continue to say, overcut the wood. So we needed a 4-foot piece of wood. We overcut it, meaning we came in with rates that we thought were very adequate. But we knew that the danger was that they were a bit high in the marketplace. So the product came out in the market, and we are in the process of reevaluating opportunities where we can adjust those rates. And we anticipate a rate filing going in the fourth quarter. And I think those rates are going to come down quite a bit, perhaps 10%. So we're in that process right now. During the Rudy analytics with Federated National, we did lose time in terms of adjusting the rates on Monarch National because of the analytics. It will be deployed and it's anticipated in both companies. So we have high expectations for Monarch. I believe that will come with the new, hopefully with the new rates in the first quarter of 2016. And I think that you'll see a much bigger penetration into the marketplace with that.
Okay. And so I guess, do the analytics proved imply that Monarch can be ramped up faster now, or?
The big thing that we need for Monarch is we need to adjust the rates so they're more competitive in the marketplace. We are writing business. We're getting great data in terms of where it is competitive in the marketplace, but also where there's opportunities. So that will come online, it's anticipated in a much bigger presence during 2016.
And in terms of, I know you said you're going to adjust the rates in Monarch. What about the rates on the legacy FedNat business? Are there, I guess, what's the trajectory there?
We're actually going to be putting a filing in with the state sometime during the fourth quarter. Our last indication was approximately 2% rates down. That's old. That's stale data. I would anticipate our rates may be mid-single digits, that they would be coming down. A big part of that is the reinsurance expense that we've realized, that savings that we've realized will be passed through to our policyholders.
Okay. And my next question is about the 92% retention that you've talked about. So can you just clarify, was that 92% retention across the board, what you saw in the quarter? And I guess, what is that sustainable, or is 88% still the longer-term run rate?
Well, with that, Arash, I'm going to answer that question, but then I'm going to have you circle through the queue again. Because I know you've got a lot of questions, and we want to answer all of them. To that, it varies quarter to quarter, 88%, 90%, 92%. There's a lot of different variables in there, but I think generally in the high 80s, low 90s from quarter to quarter is generally where you're going to see us. But with that, if you don't mind, let me go to another caller and then circle back, please.
Sure.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Greg Peters with Raymond James. Your line is open.
Good morning, and congratulations on the quarter.
Hey, thanks, Greg.
You know, I prefer just to circle back to the pricing discussion and just talk about, you know, the core FedNat book of business. Having listened to a number of these other conference calls for other Florida homeowners companies, you know, we hear commentary about how competitive the market is and how intense pricing is and how there's downward pressure there. And then you come along and post really phenomenal results in terms of growth and gross written premium. So, Mike, I thought maybe you could spend a couple minutes and just provide us some color behind how you're getting to your pricing, because the result would imply that your pricing may be lower than your peers. And I'm not sure that's the case. And it might be more just an agent relationship issue that's helping to drive your top line. But perhaps you can provide some additional color on this area.
Well, Greg, I think that the Florida marketplace is very competitive. And our secret sauce is the 280 employees that work for the company that do their best every day for our policyholders and our agents. And I think our agents look for the opportunity to place business with us. So we don't have to be the cheapest policy every time. We need to be in the ballpark. So we work very hard at that. Our business model has always been based on voluntary organic growth. We've invested heavily in that model. I think there was clearly other opportunities in the marketplace that have been hugely, hugely profitable, far more profitable than the business model that we chose. However, our business model that we chose and will be staying with for as long as I'm with the company, which is going to be hopefully for a very, very long time, is we're going to write organic voluntary business with our partner agents, and we're going to service it. So it's a commitment to the Florida market. I think some of the ratios in Florida have been more than impressive for some of the results that you may be seeing. And, you know, that's what you call the free market. When you see people making inordinate profits, people come in to steal that business. And I think our business model is much more modest and sustainable.
Was there a change in the ratio of submissions that were bound in the third quarter relative to historical experience?
Well, that's normally I would give you that exact number, but the third quarter was unusual because we had the analytics turned off. So with that, the third quarter is irregular. So as you know, we were writing around $3 million a week when we had the old analytics. When we removed the old analytics, it ballooned up to in excess of $6 million a week. So what we did was we had to turn off business, slow it down. So we turned off 76 zip codes across the state where business was coming in unprofitably and was not sustainable to our capital. And that brought our ratio, or I should say our weekly premium, back down to about $3 million. We're at about $3 million now, but you'll see that Q3 was higher than that, and that's because when the analytics were turned off, we wrote an extra $10 or $15 million that really didn't anticipate. With the deployment of the new analytics, which is very technical in terms of what's different about the analytics, I think that you may see our premium creep back up to 3.5, maybe 4 million, maybe more per week, and then we will recalibrate with the business that comes in and assess what's coming in and determine how we want to manage that exposure. But very excited about the new analytics, and those go live on the 16th of November.
So just on the – when you get to this 3.5 or 4 million number of weekly sales, When you come back to us, are we going to see a reversion back to some lower level of bound relative to the number of submissions, or is it still going to be elevated?
Ultimately, our old analytics, we were basically binding about 12% of the quote, doing around 65 to 70,000 quotes a month. I believe that our quote volume will pick up again. And I believe that our ratio, it's hard to determine what it's going to be, but it may be pretty close to 12%. Maybe it goes up a few points. I don't know. And we won't know that until we have a good 60 or 90 days of data under our belt. And then we continuously reevaluate. Our number one expense is reinsurance. The number one way to manage reinsurance is to manage our exposure. And it's very easy to grow and write business in an unprofitable manner. And we are hypersensitive to that. So we will recalibrate continuously to ensure that what we're writing is sustainable.
Perfect. Listen, I'll ask one last question and then re-queue. Can you just talk about within your core book of business if there's any seasonality to the AOP loss ratio as we think about the fourth quarter and we think about the results you've posted this year? And again, thanks for your answers, and I'm going to re-queue with the follow-ups.
All right, thanks, Greg. To the AOP, it's not like that we have freezes as you see up north in the winter. Obviously, the wet season tends to be over the summer, which is the third quarter, but nothing really sticks out in a glaring manner. So I think, as we've indicated, we've been running at close to 50% of net premium and about 28.5% of gross for our AOP, and I think that's been fairly consistent.
Our next question comes from the line of Samir Kaur with Capital Returns Management. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning, guys.
Morning, Samir.
I just have a quick question. The $56 million in the quarter, what do you have the split of that of FedNat versus Monarch?
Oh, it's the vast majority of that is Federated National. Monarch has been very slow. Force, we're under $2 million as of we sit here today. We're talking about maybe it varies from week to week, but let's just call it around $75,000 a week in Monarch. And, you know, that's a low number, and that number needs to come up, but we need to do it correctly. And as I indicated, I think that will happen more in the latter half of Q1 into Q2.
Okay. And you're throwing a lot of numbers around there with Greg's question. Mike, can you just maybe reiterate it? Are you guys seeing the continuation of these higher level of premiums coming in Q4 thus far?
Right now, we're still averaging approximately $3 million a week in premium. I think once we launch the new analytics, which is the 16th, which I believe is a week from Monday, I think you're going to see it tick up. So I think next week will tick up as well, because anytime we make a change, people rush the business in before the change goes into effect. So maybe we do 3.5 or 4 next week. I don't know, but there'll be some type of push there. And then with the new analytics, basically the marketplace will determine how that impacts, and the agents will find the new sweet spot, and they'll start submitting the business. And I anticipate that it will tick up over $3 million. It might be 3.5 or 4. There's no specific goal that we're trying to write 3 or 3.5 or 4 million a week. We're trying to write profitable, sustainable business.
Okay. And I just have a few questions to better understand the accounting change. And Pete, maybe you can help me with this. How do you think the EPS would have been different, if at all, if you had stayed under the old quota share accounting treatment?
Well, that's a good question, Samir. I think that as we've said publicly, or I said publicly, and Mike and I have said, well, we've been on the road, that under the old methodology, we were basically estimating what the balance was going to be at the end of the contract, and then we were also putting a probability weighting on storms. So had we not changed and adjusted to 944, we would have, at the end of the third quarter, had to take a look at what we projected the balance to be in the experience account, plus the likelihood of a storm. Third quarter being over, the likelihood of a storm basically dropped to, well, I don't know, 5%, let's just say. So I believe that the third quarter under the old methodology and the third quarter under the new methodology would look exactly the same, you know, give or take a couple $100,000, be about the same amount of money, because we had only accrued $7 million under the old methodology, and we were projecting that account to be net of unpaid losses, almost $21-22 million. So we were going to have to 1.7 we were booking. So long story short, the quarter would have been pretty close to the same.
And Samir, just to add a little bit to that, that is Federated National's profit that it's able to book. So just want to clarify for everyone's benefit, however you look at that, that's a profit that was generated by the insurance company, and unfortunately accounting can be rather complicated, that we're able to realize. So there's nothing really unusual about it other than this is the book of business that we have, and we're able to realize those underwriting results.
Okay, great. And just maybe two more clarifying questions. So 5 quarters into the 2014 quota share, we'll call that quota share to date. Is the profit share recognized to date under both systems the same?
I would say what we've done is we have recognized through 5 quarters as of 9/30. The actual premiums that we're owed back minus the reinsurer's margin and all unpaid losses as of 9/30 are back in our net reserves. So we brought everything back as if we commuted it on 9/30. All the premiums that are owed us minus their margin, all the unpaid losses are back on our books. So that's what's recorded right now. The actual balance is in the experience account.
Okay. And just on the competition front, the question about Bay pricing advantage because of your cost structure and your size, or
no matter what business you're in, you need some scale. And when you look at the Florida marketplace, you look at companies with over $100 million of statutory surplus, and it's very few. Let's say no more than a half a dozen. So I think there's a competitive disadvantage to a lot of our competitors that have $25 million of surplus, and there's many, or $50 million of surplus. So we absolutely have a benefit to economies of scale, no doubt about it. But you're right. We have a great advantage as it relates to what's called our MGA. Florida is an MGA model. So our insurance carrier pays their MGA to manage the business. And this is the model that's prevalent in the state of Florida. With that, we keep the profit in the insurance company. So we have an MGA with our agent acquisition that's extremely beneficial to our insurance company. We are long-term committed to the Florida marketplace. So our acquisition expense is under 20%, when many of our competitors are in the 25 to 30 range, and there's actually some in excess of 30 trying to pull profit out of our carrier. The way I usually explain it to people is would you fly in a plane, if the captain had a parachute? And we're keeping our capital where it needs to be. We're committed to the Florida marketplace. We have always paid claims. We will always pay claims. And whether that's AOP, whether that's catastrophes on the horizon that may occur because of storms, our business model is very long on Florida. We're committed to it.
Great. That's it for me. Thanks.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Ryan Brines with Janney. Your line is open.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Ryan.
Good morning, guys. So some of your Florida competitors have been involved in M&A recently to diversify outside of Florida. Just want to get your thoughts on that, as well as kind of, I guess, the M&A environment currently down in Florida.
Sure. We will absolutely look at any opportunity that will create value for our shareholders, no doubt about it. However, we're very disciplined on our approach, and not as opportunistic as others may look at the marketplace. So we are growing outside of Florida. We're in three states writing property outside of Florida. I believe it will be approximately $20 million. So $20 million may be, you're talking single digit. You're talking maybe 4 or 5% of our total exposure. We're absolutely looking, pushing non-Florida those opportunities, but very, very slow. We're in no rush to compete with the Allstates and the State Farms and the Eries and the, there's so many companies out there that write write property in many states. There's opportunities in coastal markets all on the eastern seaboard as well as in the Gulf. But we're in no rush to any decision or any type of growth that's not sustainable. So we will go in these markets, and we are. We're currently in Louisiana, Alabama. We're in South Carolina, and we've recently been licensed in Texas. But it's going to be very slow and very deliberate. In terms of M&A, there's opportunities out there. We will look at opportunities. And if we think there's something that will create value for our shareholders, we'll do it. But, once again, I think the biggest concern with an acquisition is the culture. Our culture is what really makes us different as a company, and the idea of integrating another company into our culture has a lot of challenges. So if we can do it and we can do it accretive, we're going to pursue it, but we're not chasing growth for growth's sake.
Gotcha. No, great. Thanks for that. And then my last question, if I look at kind of the expenses, the ratios look pretty similar to what they were last year. But then on an absolute basis, they're significantly, again, higher. But I just want to figure out, you know, what's going on there. Is that a result of you know, the quota share? Again, looks like the earned premium ticked up pretty significantly in this quarter. Just want to make sure I understand the mechanics of that transaction.
Well, Ryan, it's Pete. I think that, you know, we look to target operating underwriting to be around 13-14% of revenue, not a premium. The quota share, I didn't really have one impact, but I'll just give you the flavor of a couple things. If you remember, we have an agreement with Sage Shore, which helps us, is an MGA writing helping us write property out of the state of Florida. We pay them a profit sharing contingency, which we were offsetting against the quota share income we were booking. We no longer are using that line item, as we discussed. So that fell into O&U, the amount that we're paying Satra fell into O&U. And one of the other items, just give you the flavor of two of them. One of the other items is we received commission income from Aon, brokerage income from Aon, which we were receiving on a net basis before, meaning they would pay one of our partners for our underwriting systems and to give us the net amount. Instead, we are now getting the gross amount. That's why you see other income is higher than it has been. And then we are paying one of our underwriting partner ourselves. So those are two main things. I know that the O&U was about 16% of total revenue in this quarter. But the year to date, it's around 13, and I think that 13, 14 is your number, not 16.
Awesome, great. Thanks for the call there, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Doug Ruth with Lennox Financial Services. Your line is open.
Hi. congratulations on a beautiful report.
Thank you, Doug.
I was wondering, do you have the amount of insurance in force and, like, what you think the market share is now?
Well, generally speaking, I mean, you know, the marketplace has been approximately $9.6 billion, so call it $10 billion. You know, as we sit here today, I mean, you see how we ended the quarter. As we sit here today, I think we're at around 415. So that would tell you we're about, let's just say in simple math, roughly 4% still. So we're moving the needle very slowly. You know, I would say we're about 4%, and, you know, I think in that trend, we might end the year at $430 million within the Florida space. Once again, let's say that's around, you know, 4-4.5%.
Okay, that's good. I'll give a question for Pete. Could you talk about the bond portfolio, how much is municipal and how much is corporate and what the duration is?
Sure, Doug. We have not really changed the duration since we've been discussing duration for the last year. It's approximately 3.8 years in duration, and the municipal portfolio, our portfolio is $421 million. 14% of that 421 is cash. But 26% of our portfolio is in municipal bonds. And I don't know if you saw on the front page of the C section of the Wall Street Journal today talked about munis being the star of 2015, and I think that has, on an after-tax basis or tax-adjusted basis, is helped the increase in investment income. Well, also helping the increase in investment income is obviously more assets under management, but also on a tax-adjusted basis, the muni portfolio is doing very well. And like I said, it's about 26% of the portfolio right now.
Okay, that sounds terrific. And Mike, will the Monarch, will it do more business, you think, in the fourth quarter? Will it be at a higher run rate than what you did during the third quarter?
I don't see anything that would lead us to that conclusion yet. But once again, it's rates are a bit high. We're trying to adjust that. That takes a lot of work. So we're undergoing that review right now and hope to get that filed. So if we get that filed in the fourth quarter, I hope that that's approved in the first quarter, and I hope that it's, you know, out in the marketplace April 1. Until that happens, I don't think you're going to go within Monarch. We're eager to do it, but we're going to do it correct, which does take a little bit longer, but very eager to get that implemented so we can continue to penetrate the market.
Okay. Well, thank you for answering my questions. It's a beautiful job, and congratulations to the whole Federated team there.
Thank you.
Thank you. As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and then one on your touchtone telephone. Our next question comes from the line of Adam Kalber with William Blair. Your line is open.
Good morning. Thanks.
Good morning.
You've sort of talked about this a bit, but how much of the premium growth, gross premium growth, was much higher this quarter than it's been the last couple of quarters? How much of that was due to the better retentions, and how much is just new business volume?
Well, if you say that we do $3 million a week and there's 13 weeks in a month, in a quarter, that's $39 million, and here we came in at approximately $50 million. So you're seeing that the analytics really kind of brought more of that in. When we had no analytics, it brought in more business, as I say, probably around the $15 million that gets you up to around $54 million. So it does help us. It was 56 that we wrote. So the biggest variance on that is that we had no analytics in place and we're wide open. So we wrote $56 million instead of a 39. But let me clarify. The goal is not to write 39. New business may climb to $4 million. It may drop to $2 million. We're going to write what we believe is profitable.
Okay, thanks. And then Progressive bought out ASI earlier this year. Has that had any impact how ASI acts in the market?
Well, I think ASI is it's a great story of Florida. I think it's a homegrown company that really kind of grew up to the big leagues, right? And they're in before they were acquired, I believe they were in 26 states, and I think that's what most of our competitors aspire for. But I think ASI was pretty special. They're not real big in Florida. We don't run into them a lot in Florida. They're very niche in what they write. They write very good quality business. But I think they were pretty unique. I know a lot of people are trying to replicate that. But we don't see them a lot in the marketplace. I think they know their space, and it's a small piece of the space. And I can't speak on their behalf, but I think their growth intention is really to augment their auto business in all the states that they're at.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And we have a follow-up from the line of BW. Your line is open.
Hey, Ross. Thanks for calling back in.
Oh, no problem. So just a couple of follow-ups. So on the accounting change, so I get that, I guess there was no impact to EPS versus doing it the old way. The one thing I just want to ask, going forward, will it cause any changes, for example, in 4Q and 1Q of 16? And I guess with that said, what's the right way to look at ceded premiums as a percentage of gross premiums going forward? Is the ratio going to be different?
Well, I think that we tried to quantify that in the press release. I think if you look at the quota share that we entered into in 2014, which, as you say, has three quarters remaining, I think that the net impact to our bottom line is going to be somewhere between is going to be around $2.5 million pre-tax. So you might have, in that case, maybe $3 million or let's say $4 million in less ceded, and then you would have $1.5 million in unpaid losses coming back, something like that. But I think it's 2.5 approximately. And let me say that the 2.5 that we're estimating is based on us continuing to write at the levels Mike has mentioned, and also the claims activity remaining consistent. As it relates to the quota share that we entered into in July of 2015, the 10% quota share, I think that's going to add to the bottom line approximately $800,000 a quarter pre-tax. So we can talk offline, Arash, about what I think that does to ceded premium as a percentage. We can get into the different components of losses coming back and a reduction in ceded premium. But I wanted to put in the press two quota shares combined for about $3.3 million pre-tax favorable to the income statement for the next
right.
three quarters.
But I guess is that 3.3 million, what I'm trying to understand is in prior quarters under the old accounting, you also had, I think, I guess what you would basically have that chart where you'd say, okay, the quota share is break even with.
Yeah, we didn't put that chart in there. No, so that chart, what we did in the past was we were comparing if we didn't do quota share and it was a straight XOL program, so we keep all of our profits. We don't give the reinsurer his margin of 6.75 because it's all on our books, and then we have to buy more XOL. So if you look at it on that basis, inception to date, the 10% quota share and the 30% quota share, inception to date, the true economic benefit of doing the quota share is about $3.5 to $3.7 million as we sit here at 9:30.
Okay, so the $3.3 million you quoted in last night's press release, that's the benefit you see from
the
new
statement.
Accounting.
Right.
That's only an accounting issue. That's not about quota share versus no quota share. That's just about we have this accounting change. This accounting change will increase EPS by, $3.3 million over the next few quarters.
Yes. It's not the economic impact of XOL versus
okay.
quota share. Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
So basically, 3Q15, there was absolutely no EPS impact from the new accounting, but 4Q15 through 2Q16, positive $3.3 million impact from accounting.
Well, that's an interesting, because we under the old system, we would have still had monies in the experience account to recognize. However,
okay.
I do think what we're doing now and the way we were doing it, we're getting to the same answer. It's the geography on the financial statements has changed. That's all. But we're getting to the same answer.
Okay. So EPS is basically completely unaffected by this.
I would say that under either method, we'd be at the same place today, yes.
Okay. And in terms of your on a net basis, should loss and expense ratio stay consistent?
Yeah, I mean yes, because when we bring back the losses, we're also bringing back the premium associated with it. The net loss ratio is going to be in the same range it's been in for the last 16 quarters, which is basically bounced around between 45 and 50, with maybe a couple of blips here and there below 45, maybe one blip above 50, but it
okay.
will remain in that range, as long as, the claims activity stays the way it stayed over the last, 12, 16 quarters.
Okay, that makes sense. And when you say the analytics coming on should sort of take you up to the 3.5 to 4 million range, so why is it that the weekly, estimate, if you will, is higher under the new analytics than under the old analytics?
Well, to clarify, I don't want to say should, but it's possible that it's going to trend up. So right now we have 76 zip codes closed across the state because we don't have the analytics in place. With the analytics, we can be more granular. When we're more granular, we're going to reopen those zip codes. But we're going to do so carefully. So they're going to reopen those. We're going to reopen those zip codes. More business will flow in, and then we're going to be hypersensitive to the business that we're getting in there to make sure that it's consistent with our objective, which is long-term, sustainable, profitable business. So as we open up those zip codes, volume will most likely increase.
Okay. And then Pete, sorry, just to go back once again. So 2Q15 ceded premiums earned were about 52% of gross. This quarter it was about 40. So is that kind of 45% range the new normal for ceded premiums under the new accounting?
I to be honest with you, Roger, I have not done the math. Let's talk about
okay.
that offline. I'd be glad to go through it with you, and we can look at it together.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah.
All right. That's all for me. Thanks for the answers and congrats on the quarter.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you. And we have a follow-up question from the line of Greg Peters with Raymond James. Your line is open.
One cleanup question for you guys. Can you give us an idea of how you think the reinsurance market is going to shape up going into next year's renewal, and specifically as it relates to your 30% quota share? I know it's a couple quarters early, but is your temperature to renewing that quota share, and are pricing conditions comparable, better, or worse? Are you getting any indications on pricing, at this point, on that quota share?
Yeah, it's purely speculative at this point. You know, here we go about 7 months out. But obviously, on a macro level, the world is awash in cash. And a lot of that cash is found in the reinsurance space, primarily Bermuda. And I find it hard to believe that the cash will leave that space. You got a lot of cash looking for opportunities. So the market's very soft in terms of the world of reinsurance, and among the beneficiaries of that are the companies that are in Florida, and I believe the policyholders associated with those companies. So I think the markets continues to be soft. I think that the variance between a good company and a not as good company, a lot tighter than it probably should be in terms of the cost of reinsurance. The rumors are reinsurance rates are going down, maybe another 5%. I doubt 10%. But, you know, the reinsurers are clearly, stating that they don't want to see rates go down, and I can appreciate that after 4 or 5 years of those rates tightening up. We're going to have a big cat program next year. If we continue to write $3 million a week over 50 weeks, that's $150 million of premium, and at 3-to-1 on PML to premium, you're talking another $450 million of potential reinsurance that we may need. If the FHCF provides $200 million, I can tell you, I'm already having meetings for next year. I've already had 21 meetings talking to our reinsurance partners for next year to secure that $250 million of additional capital that we need for next wind season. So we're very proactive. The reinsurance market is very receptive. You know, we don't have cat bonds, have no interest in cat bonds. But the bigger we get, we may have to explore that. I think the capital is more than adequate in the market. It's just a matter of how much the pricing will change. I think the pricing may go down, but we really won't know that until we get into really May into June.
Right. And Mike, just on the quota share, you know, the 30% quota share expires, I believe, June 30th next year. I know this is well out in advance, but you know, what's your temperature to renewing the quota share versus going straight to XL loss?
Sure. I know I've given a lot of people a lot of headaches with this quota share, including the analysts. I get that, but I'm here for our policyholders. I'm here for our shareholders. Absolutely, if we have the opportunity to do a quota share that benefits our policyholders and shareholders over excess of loss, we will do it. If the economics don't work and we need to shift back into excess of loss, we will do it. So I hope those partners, which are incredible partners, have the appetite to renew the program under similar terms. And I believe those similar terms relative to the market appear to be still competitive. So we're excited to explore those options.
Yeah, Greg, I was just going to say, I mean, you know, analysts and accounting headaches aside, it was the right thing to do. As I answered Arash's question, I mean, if you look at XOL as compared to quota share, you know, and the cost it would have cost to buy XOL at those lower levels on the tower, this has worked out to be, inception to date, with still three quarters to go, $3.5 million economic advantage to FedNat and the shareholders and policyholders. So absolutely the right way to go with the terms that we had.
Well, I can certainly, from where I sit, validate your comments about causing headaches to the analyst community. moving from quota share back to XOL, you know, there are some capital considerations. And I know you've said before that you've never intended or expected or wanted to use quota share to sort of rent out capital. Has your perspective changed on that, or you still have the same traditional approach?
Well, I think let's assume Federated National grows at $3 million a week. That's clearly not sustainable forever. But even if it is, the denominator is getting bigger against the numerator. So the numerator of $3 million a week means it will stress the capital that much less, which means that barring any foreseen events, the need for additional capital or the need, as you're inferring, that quota share makes decreases as the book gets bigger. So I know there's a lot of math there. So It's another benefit that we've received from it. We've got capital in the insurance company. It's a profitable book of business. It's generating a nice underwriting profit. So I think the need for additional capital within Federated National Insurance Company will decrease in a flat world, as all information that we have today. Yes, we're getting that benefit from the quota share, but I don't know. I really don't think that's a big part of our calculation, because we have adequate capital not only in the insurance company but in the holding company that we could downstream as needed.
Perfect. Thank you again for all your answers.
Well, thank you, Greg.
Thank you. And I'm showing no further questions at this time. I'd like to turn the call back to Mr. Braun for closing remarks.
Just want to thank everyone for their time today. Any follow-up questions, please do not hesitate to give myself and Pete a call. We really enjoy sharing the success of the company with everyone that has any comment. So thank you and have a great day.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This does conclude the program, and you may all disconnect. Everyone have a wonderful day.